You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball.
Welcome into a very special edition of Extra Innings, our season-ending Extra Innings here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center in Greenville. Our good friend Trent Britt, want to thank him very much for sponsorship of the program. And with me right now, my partner in crime, Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Dave. You know, we've had right at a week, not quite a week, to think about the 2022 season. What a tremendous season it was. I'm doing some history-making things, and very excited to talk about it with a few former Pirates.
No doubt. Before I forget, Bubba, I know we're going to talk a lot about baseball. For the guys on the panel and everyone watching and listening, happy Father's Day. Very special day. As my daughter told me this morning, Bubba, every day should be Father's Day, so she gets some extra brownie points there. hopefully we were hoping to spend Father's Day in Omaha. Pirates fall short on Sunday night, and we can talk about the wonderful rain delays in the history of the Pirate program. It's unfortunate for us, but we have great Pirate players with us right now. If you're watching right now, the top right corner, we always talk about Hollywood Squares. We have Shane Matthews. How are you, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. We have Dustin Sasser there in the left, bottom left corner, Warren Gaspar as well. Howdy. Guys, how y'all doing?
Good. Thank you.
Fantastic.
So we wanted to have you guys on, get your perspective, different areas of the program, to talk about what you thought about the Pirates season. Obviously, Pirates start off 1-5. First half of the season, not the way we wanted it, 14-13, but man, they went on a tear.
No, I guess I could start. No, it was amazing to see the progression and watch the team get better and better, you know, and peak when you really want the team to peak. You know, just watching the broadcast, and it's amazing to hear that they went the whole month of May without losing. That's crazy to think about, going a whole month of playing conference and, you know, playing some pretty strong non-conference, you know, teams, you know, around North Carolina, and, you know, to go a whole month and, you know, not lose until, you know, getting to regionals is pretty cool.
And you gotta think about too the quality of the games that are going on in the month of May. You've got your conference schedule, but then you've got the tournament schedule, and then for them to not lose a game really just told me that this team was very resilient. They were tough, and like Warren said, they were peaking at the right time, which is huge anytime you look at sports in basketball or in football and other sports when they're leading into an NCAA tournament like they did, to be peaking at the right time. And I think that's what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the adversity they went through, you know, at the beginning of the year, and then kind of, you know, you lose a couple of key parts, you know, obviously you lose two of your, you know, starting pitchers in your rotation, you know, that's a big void to fill. But then also being able to battle back and kind of find their way. And I think with streaks, a lot of people don't realize like how hard that is. And then not only that, like Sass said, like going into your conference schedule, you know, I mean, that feat of what they did, that's legit. Like, that's impressive to be able to rattle off that many games and be able to put it together consistently on a nightly basis.
I think for me, one of the things that sticks out, guys, is the fact that we win the regular season championship, conference championship, first time ever we've ever done that in American, which is really impressive. And for us, the winning streak, the most games ever, we have that. You look at the national seed we get for the first time being able to host a super regional in Greenville. I know, Warren, with you guys, it was that was actually the first time we ever hosted, but that was in Kinston.
Yeah.
So people don't realize that. Maybe some people don't. I do. I was there, but happy to have that. It feels like this year was the year that we knocked down some more doors Disappointed we were so close last Saturday. But then again, when you look at the season as a whole, there was a chance, and I didn't believe that was going to happen, but there was a chance we may not even have made a regional. We host a regional, host a super regional. We have a lot of great feats. Cliff has now 4-time coach of the year in the American. There's so many accolades. We could sit here and talk just on accolades alone for the whole hour. But I think overall we're disappointed. We're hurt about the way that the season ended. But if you look at the season as a whole, we accomplished a lot.
Agreed.
Now, Shane, obviously with you being a member of that 2004 team, I guess you were, what, a freshman that year?
Yeah, me and Sass are both freshmen that
year. Yeah, so with you guys being a part of that team, just you had the 19-game win streak. This year's team won 20. So talk about it from that standpoint. But then also with both of you guys being pitchers, think if that team would have lost Greg Bunn, or in your case, Warren, if that team, I guess, what would have lost Sam Nairn, or you know, yeah, or someone like that. You know, going back to the beginning of the season when this team lost its ace in Carson Wisenhunt.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things that, you know, throughout seasons, like, it always seems like somebody, an integral part of your lineup or your pitching staff or position guy, gets hurt at a time that, you know, it's unfortunate and it's almost sometimes bad timing. But I think the way Cliff has done it, and then also the kind of the way the program at ECU, it's like, hey, who's the next guy up? You know, it's always, you know, hey, this is going to be your opportunity. You don't know when your opportunity is going to be. But it's just one of those things like, hey, you know, you get the ball, you know, say in a pitching situation, you get the ball, like, hey, it's your time to shine, you know, step up. And, you know, I had parts of that, you know, my freshman year. I know Sasser had parts of that in his career, in his freshman year. And I think it speaks to the caliber of kids that we recruit, and kind of not only talent-wise, but also the makeup that you see that kind of helps move that along, you know.
Yeah, like you're saying, Shane, it certainly speaks to the culture that, you know, Cliff, Coach Palumbo, and the rest of the staff have built over the last several seasons, and this team specifically, because, you know, early on in the year, you know, you heard Cliff say it on multiple occasions that this team, he honestly did not know how to approach it to some degree, because he was talking about keeping his thumb on them, that they showed what they were capable of, but then they were not able to handle success. But there at the beginning of conference play, you know, he adapted and, you know, kind of put it on the leadership, like Bryson Wall, Ben Newton, et cetera. And those guys really did a terrific job of, you know, making this a player-led team.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to, you know, I think for me, just speaking for myself, like that year, the 04 that we went to, you know, hosted a regional and then went to a super regional, we wouldn't have been there if we didn't have the upperclassmen leadership that we had. Just those guys, they held you accountable, but they were right there in the fight with you. So I think that speaks a lot. And then, like you said, Newton and those guys, you know, you got some older guys that have been through some adversity, that also been in that situation where they've been to a regional, they've been to a super regional. So they know what it takes to kind of get to that postseason play, but then be able to motivate the guys that are younger to kind of lead them along the way. And I think that it's just a part of the culture and the program that, you know, has been created that continues to carry on.
Yep.
What's exciting for me is the fact that you look at Jacob Jenkins Coward, a freshman. He's the kind of guy that you really feel like that the future is bright. We reload with our program. It's not like Cliff has a whole bunch of seniors. That, I think that would have hurt even more if it was, not that it didn't hurt, but it would hurt more if it was a senior-led team, a whole bunch of seniors. But you look at it, there's a lot of young guys, including like JJC, that I really feel like the future is bright. We've got a lot of guys coming in. You never know how that's going to work out. But having said all that, it just feels like that it's only a matter of time. I know people get tired of hearing that. The fans want to hear that we're going to Omaha, like, now. Nobody more than I do. But I feel like it's very, very soon, especially with this group that we have now.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the not only the senior leadership, but you also you have to count on those underclassmen, those young guys, and it's like you said, with, and you know, from what I saw this year, you have a core group of guys that are going to come through that program for the next couple years with that taste in their mouth that they experienced last weekend, and it's just going to fuel them, but also it's going to help create that leadership in those guys for those young guys that are coming in next year that want to get there too. And I like it, like you said, I think it, we're right there. I mean, we're right there, and we've been there, you know, a couple times before, but it's like this year felt a little bit different. You know, you had a lot of us former guys that were there that Saturday and saw that game against Texas, and it's just a different feeling when you go around there. And then, you know, you've got Coach Godwin that is doing the right things, bringing in the right guys, but he's also making sure that the guys there are getting what they need as far as the facilities and the training and strength and stuff that you're seeing pop up around the stadium as well. So
I want to get your idea, your take real quick, Bub. I'm sorry. I'll let you ask a question. I want to get your take, guys, being former players, what was the atmosphere like for you guys being at that game? It was just nuts for the regional and super regional. And when I think about Greg Olson, when he said it's like that, he talked about Keith LeClaire and Clark LeClaire Stadium. He was talking about the fact that it was like having a football atmosphere at a baseball stadium, how loud the stadium was.
It was unbelievable. I mean, there were several times when I would hear the purple and gold chant or just when a run was scored or we made a big out in the field where it got deafening loud. It was unbelievable. And for anybody that has never been to a game of that caliber, needed to be there and experience that, because it would change your whole outlook on what Pirate baseball is really all about.
No, yeah, just to piggyback off of what Dustin was saying, just be in that atmosphere. You know, I'm sure Texas has been in many, you know, intimidating stadiums, but you could tell they're looking around like, what is going on? You know, because as loud and as rowdy as the fans in the jungle, you know, every fan is engaged. You know, they're, you know, definitely know what's going on, and just, you know, just the vibe. And then again, from a former player standpoint, you know, it was really cool to be around, you know, a lot of players that I haven't seen since I played. You know, I met Dustin for the first time. You know, players that played before me, after me, during, you know, coaches that I haven't seen since I played, and just, you know, just seeing that camaraderie, and just, you know, it was really cool to be part of that. You know, yeah, we came close, and you know, we're knocking on the door, and it's just, you know, like everybody says, it's just a matter of time before, you know, everybody's booking their flight to Omaha.
Yeah, kind of like you were saying, Warren, going back to the atmosphere. I watched the first two games from out there behind the plate, standing on the concourse, but opted to take the game in from the right field of jungle on the Sunday night last week, and it was unbelievable the way we had 4,000 plus there for a 10-15 first pitch, and the atmosphere was incredible. And so I was telling the Texas right fielder, I said, "Hey, we just want to make you feel like College Station when you go there from now on, that's going to be more like a family reunion."
Well, to kind of piggyback on what they were saying, you know, I was able to come to the Super Regionals, but I wasn't able to come to the Regionals. And it was one of those things, like, it was just great to hear of, like, the announcers and, like, commentators talk about, like, how involved, like, our fans are. Like, every pitch, like, the ball could have been a foot outside on an outside corner pitch at 0-2, and they were like, oh, like, you know, that's a strike, you know. But every pitch, you know, you could hear, like, a pin drop or a breath. Like, all of our fans were into it, and I even had people that I know, you know, back home now that, you know, they're like, wait, they let your fans, like, in the jungle, like, hang over the fence or this or that? And I'm like, hey, that's the jungle. That's the way it's always been. You know, if you know, that's the atmosphere that you want to have. And I mean, I've never heard it as loud and just constant as what I heard, like, you know, against Texas as far as that. So, I mean, that as a player, that's what you dream of, you know, and to be able to have your own home fans and everybody backing you and your school and everybody else around you. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, what's going through the players as well, like how electric that felt, you know, to them.
I was going to say, guys, if I'm the baseball program, go ahead and put season tickets on sale now, because euphoria is still there. And I had so many people, and I wanted to ask you guys, maybe y'all know, and Bubba, maybe you know, I know we're doing a lot of stuff in left field. We'll talk about that later on with Pirates United, a lot of stuff that Cliff wants. But I had so many people, the regional and super regional, say, how many seats could we add to the stadium? Because we want to have seats, and we're – no offense to the jungle, but there are a lot of us that couldn't see the scoreboard and things like that we wanted to be able to see. But they were asking how many seats that we could potentially put in Clark LeClair. And I said, I don't know, but it will be nice to be sitting instead of in the jungle.
Yeah, as far as some of that, and we'll dive into it deeper, Dave, with the Pirates Unite campaign to make the we'll call it the Pirate Baseball Ops Building, for lack of a better word, and down the left field line. Projected cost of nearly $7 million. But, hopefully when that is built, they'll be able to put a ribbon board or something, a miniature scoreboard like you would see at a minor league park or a major league stadium where it's unable to see the larger video board.
Yeah, I was saying, even if you could put, like, right there on the hitting facility, you could put something that has balls, strikes, innings, a basic scoreboard on that building or somewhere near that where we could see it, or somewhere in left field for maybe the folks in the jungle. But, hey, those are good problems to have, because that means that we have a lot of fans, and we have tremendous fans. And there are a lot of programs that are even College World Series teams, I'm sure, that wish they could have the support that we do. So it's a good problem to have when you have, what was it, 7,500 requests for the Super Regional for 4,600 tickets. I mean, how many baseball programs? And I'm not trying to be a homer, but it's just something to be proud of, whether if you're a Pirate.
No, absolutely. Like, you know, being from California, you know, Stanford's right by our house. You know, I actually went to the UCLA, ECU series in UCLA. And, you know, just seeing the fan, you know, just interest, it's not there in every single, you know, college stadium. You know, I think when I went to watch Bryant Ward, who's the coach at UCLA, you know, I think there were ranked three in the country at the time. Stanford was ranked. You know, we went there for a series, and there was maybe 1,000 fans there, if that, you know. And I'd say maybe a couple people were interested. Everybody else, you know, really wasn't, you know, definitely wasn't the jungle, you know. So, you know, that's something that, you know, I don't think people realize, you know, when you compare, you know, the home field advantage that we have over, you know, a lot of schools is, you know, it is a home field advantage. You know, the jungle does affect games because, you know, I've talked to, you know, even outfielders when I played, you know, they're scared to go back for a home run ball because, you know, if it's a home run, they're going to hear it. You know, if they strike out, they're going to hear it. You know, some kids can handle it. Some kids can't. So, you know, just, you know, the guys in the jungle don't realize how important they are, because they do affect the game. The fans do affect it, and the home field advantage is definitely huge for us.
And Warren, you were talking about that sidebar real quick, that UCLA series. What struck me was that you have a top five program at the time. It was number one, three, like you said. Yep. And they didn't broadcast any of those games. You're UCLA. Yes. And here we are. We are spoiled now. We have fans that are complaining about having games on ESPN Plus. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I love ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
And stop complaining. We could be a program that was not televised and don't have the folks that we do for video production. I could talk on and on about how great they are, but I couldn't believe that the only way that we got that was John Packard, Brian Packard's dad. for FaceTime. Facebook was the only way that we were joking, John Packard Network, JPN, or whatever, but that was the only way we got the chance to see the UCLA series.
Yeah.
And our good friend Corey Glore to listen to it. But I was really disappointed as a baseball fan, and college baseball is disappointed that I'm like, they can do better with that. They're making a ton of money being in the Pac-12. And I know probably UCLA, they probably think about basketball and football more, but I was saying, but you're one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah.
That was really disappointing. So, but anyway, that's their problem and not ours.
Yep. I think the hype around college baseball is getting better though. Like the atmosphere, as far as putting it on more the TV, and obviously there's a lot more channels, whatnot. But I think, you know, because that was back in what, like 06, 07, I think, when we went out there to play that series. But either way, like, I think college baseball in general is just in a really good place right now. I mean, a lot of people are kind of grasping onto it. You're getting a really good audience, you know, prior to, you know, just the regional, super regional, or, you know, postseason play. So hopefully it continues, because, I mean, you got kids that are playing their hearts out every weekend, you know, so hopefully they keep airing it.
No question. It's getting, and that was another question I had for you guys with the College World Series going on. Listen to the Texas A&M game this afternoon. Just the game itself, how much it's grown, and the fact that our program is a top, obviously we finished top 16, you know, obviously we'd love to be in the top 8 or number 1, but just to think about that, do you guys see, is there like something missing from your part? I mean, Cliff is doing everything he possibly can. We talked about Omaha. It looked like that we were, what, 6 outs away from Omaha, up 7-2, something like that. Do you guys see something that's missing, or is it just one of those things? It was one of those things where baseball can change so quick.
No, I mean, baseball's a game of inches, you know, and we've always been told that. And you're looking at Cliff's doing an amazing job. I mean, Cliff's he's going to get there, and I'm not worried about that at all. What he's doing with the program, the guys that he's bringing in, the fact that he's been around that program for forever. He understands what, you know, the number 23 means to our program. He understands what it takes, what kind of work you got to put into it. I'm not at all concerned about what he's doing, and you got to look at that more than anything else, and he will do what it takes. There was nothing missing that I saw standing over there along the first baseline or right field line. It's just you everybody's got to understand that Texas was preseason number 1 in the country, and they kind of, I think, went into the season and they got off to a really good start, and then they kind of hit a lull, but by the end of the year they turned on the Jets, and they were playing really well. I mean, you look at pretty much one through nine in that lineup, those guys, any one of those guys could hurt you really bad, really quickly. And that was a great team. And we had them beat. It's just, you know, that's the game of baseball. Sometimes it slips right out of the grasp of your fingertips in a blink of an eye, but I'm not at all concerned with the job that Cliff's doing. And I just hope, I hope we get there for him, because he deserves it. He really does.
No, yeah, I definitely agree. I don't think we're missing anything. I think, you know, Texas, you know, when your number 9 hitter hits 16 home runs, you know, that's and their 9 hitter, you know, they're talking about he's going to be a major league shortstop one day. You know, that speaks volumes to how good of a program they are. You know, I definitely, you know, they made it a College World Series, but, you know, I think you could even ask them throughout the season, they probably underachieved, and they, just like us, they peaked at the right time to make it the, you know, College World Series. But yeah, Texas was, you know, every hitter, you know, even though, you know, we're up 7-2, every hitter that got in the batter's box could hit a home run. You know, I don't think there's too many baseball programs in the country right now that can, you know, 1 through 9 can hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, and even their pitchers, every guy coming out of the bullpen was throwing 95, you know, so it's not like that a bunch of guys that were thumbers. That's some dudes on the team that could throw. And, you know, they're a really well-coached team, and, you know, a couple, you know, breaks here and there, you know, we're celebrating we're in Omaha, but, you know, things happen for a reason. You know, when we do make it, it's going to be a party in Greenville. I'll be there, you know, when we do make it, you know, to Omaha. But no, I think we're definitely in the right direction. You know, I think consistency is huge. I think I read an article saying we're one of four teams. I think it was Ole Miss, Stanford, maybe Oregon State that's been to the Super Regionals the last 4 years in a row. And that's hard in college baseball to have that consistency with, you know, the portal, you know, kids transferring with COVID. And that just speaks volumes to, you know, Cliff and the coaches, the recruiting the right people, getting the kids to buy in. Because you can recruit the best talent in the world, but if the kids don't buy in, you're not going anywhere. So I think that's, you know, we're definitely in the right direction. You know, I have ultimate faith in Cliff and the coaching staff. And like I said, I you know, it will happen one day. It's a matter of when.
Guys, let's bring in from the 2019, speaking of regionals and super regionals, let's bring in Evan Volva, another great pitcher. We got him with us now joining. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are y'all?
What a great night. You guys, great Pirates. Phil, you know, just to be on the panel here on the round table is an honor with you guys. I know Bubba Phil is the same way. Evan, you're part of that group with Cliff, with Coach Godwin. Talk about it's amazing. I know the guys are disappointed, just like you guys were in 2019, but here we are, four straight super regionals. I mean, the program, it just seems like we keep building and building and building and building. It's not like a flash in the pan. This program is for real.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, I can speak to, like, when I got there in 2015, I think, you know, making a regional was kind of the expectation, kind of the same thing with 16. We overachieved a little bit, but I'd say, you know, definitely these last 3 years, like four years, it seems like the norm is playing in a super regional game for the chance to go to Omaha. So that seems to definitely be the new norm. You know, unfortunately we couldn't get it done this year, but I mean, with the way the ball's rolling, I think, you know, it's just a matter of time before we get there.
No question. And it's what's great about this program as you look at through the history. And, you know, I'm tired of hearing about 32 regional appearances because, you know, without a appearance to Omaha, because I think the way that it's used is a negative. And the way that I look at it is, when you think about how many programs in the country in college baseball can say they have 32 regional appearances, you know, seven. Now we have seven super regional appearances hosting regionals. In fact, we were only us and Stanford were only ones that have hosted four straight regionals. So, I mean, that's what I think. I hope our fans, the reason I'm bringing that up is I hope our fans understand that it's I'm happy that they're hurt and disappointed because that means they care. Like we're talking about, Warren was talking about UCLA, that fans are there, but they really don't care. They're just there at a game. The series you were guys had, Evan, in 2019, he was talking about how there was only like 1,000 fans there. And, you know, it's just like, I think we take for granted how great the program has always been. I mean, as far as I've been pulling for the Pirates, I've been a fan since 1986. So, as long as I can remember, the baseball program has always been very good and consistent. And that's what I want our team to be known for and our program to be known for, and not you've never made Omaha. I mean, we are going to make Omaha, but I hate that stat because it's used in the wrong way, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of like that UCLA series, when we went there, we didn't really know what to expect. Like, I don't think any of us had ever really been to California. So we got there and we're like, man, I think they were number one in the country. Yeah, they were number one in the country at the time. And we were sixth or seventh. So it was like by far the best matchup going on that weekend. And we got there and it was like, you know, I think Friday, it was like 900 fans or something like that. And then Saturday, it was like their largest crowd ever. And it was like 1300. It was like the quietest 1300 I've ever heard in my life. But it was just like going there and seeing that. And then like coming back home for a midweek game. And, you know, we got 4,000 people at a midweek game. You know, we're playing UNC Wilmington. It just speaks to like how big baseball is over here and how much these fans in Greenville really care about it, opposed to, you know, other powerhouses elsewhere in the country.
Yeah, not to get off on a tangent, but as far as that UCLA series, you had another couple hundred more, at least, if not several hundred more on John Packard's live stream. That was hilarious.
Yeah, there's probably just as many people watching on Facebook as were at the game.
That's funny. I haven't even thought about that. It was a lot, and he was right behind home plate. And I know there are people that were complaining, broadcasters were complaining because probably the broadcast rights, but I'm like, hey, UCLA, I was just talking before you came on, Evan, and jumped on. They should have broadcast those three games. It's the number one team in the country. No excuse for that.
And Dave, that's Josh O'Neill chiming in saying the same thing. He had actually said it before I brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, number one versus number eight to watch it on Facebook. But, hey, we got to watch it. And, again, I think that one of the things we wanted to talk about tonight, guys, looking at the time, is with Pirates Unite about you guys can all speak about the facilities and the areas that you guys were in. And I know, Evan, you've been in more recent times. But talk about the – I know they want to have a former player – locker room, Evan, I know that'll be big for you coming back to being that you're alum. And guys, can you talk about there in the, I guess that would be the AZ Billy Godwin era of what you had facility wise versus what the guys have today?
Yeah. I mean, well, when Shane and I came in 2004, it was still Harrington Field. So we finished that season in the Super Regional against South Carolina. And then immediately after we finished our last home game that season, they start construction on, you know, Clark Eclair. So for us, we got to experience the last of Harrington Field. And then all of a sudden the next year, you know, Clark Eclair, and it was just two completely different fields. I mean, and now to see what is going to be happening for the facility as it's being upgraded down the left field line, and then even the weight facility that's going right back behind the stadium there. I'm just super excited and pumped up for those guys to have everything they need to be able to get the job done.
Yeah, I think, you know, just piggyback, you know, what Dustin said, because, you know, we went from a 1,200 bleacher stadium of Harrington right on top of you in your face to, you know, now Clark Eclair, which is that was a big pitching point, you know, and for us recruiting was, you know, college baseball's changing, ECU is adapting at the time, like, hey, we're trying to get better facilities, better programs for you guys as players, but then also, you know, the fans, and you know, to be able to hear about, you know, looking at doing an expansion, I think that's going to be fantastic. You know, I know people look at baseball certain ways, like throughout the year, you know, as far as like football and baseball and revenue and all that. But, you know, with ECU, it's like kind of like the field of dreams. Like if you build it, they'll come, you know, we'll fill it. That's not going to be an issue whatsoever. So I think that that's a great tool for our fans, for our programs. And then also like it goes into, you know, recruit psyche a little bit as well. You know, to see the additions that a program is taking of being, you know, like, hey, like this is a top, you know, top notch facility and program, and they're making strides. If they're putting effort into that, what are they going to put effort into me? So I think it's a good step, great step.
And Evan, you have a teammate like you did, and Alec Burleson, who's just tearing it up right now for the Memphis Redbirds. You know, it's just a matter of time before he's called up to play for the Cardinals or for some other organization, depending on, you know, how things go there. But Burley, in addition to him, you have guys like Franny and a whole lot of others who are still active. So just talk about what that professional locker room will mean when it finally becomes a reality.
Oh man, it's going to be, I mean, it'll be awesome to be able to, like, if they do, if that does become a thing, to have it to where all of the alumni can come back and train in Greenville together. Cause I mean, you've got it right now where, and COVID kind of screwed a lot of this up, but you got it now where some guys, everybody's just kind of spread out throughout the country of where they train in the off season. But I think, you know, they bring that professional locker room in. I think that that'll allow all the guys that are playing pro ball to kind of come back in, train, work out, and do everything right there at ECU. And I think that'd be a great thing, myself included. I think some people forget that I'm still playing because I've been hurt for three years now. But I'm still with the Yankees, trying to get back healthy. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that'd be huge. Just to be able to get all the guys back in town to train.
And Dave, we had Justin Butts chiming in on Facebook, brother of Brett Butts, just saying that he remembers when you guys played out at UCLA as well. Just talking about the difference in the atmosphere, despite UCLA being such a quality program.
Oh yeah, it's completely different. I mean, and like Evan was saying, there's, you know, at most 1,100-1,200 fans there. When you bring UCLA or that caliber of a program to Greenville, you're going to get 5,000 people there, and it's just going to be a totally different atmosphere as opposed to when it is out there in LA.
No question. Evan, we talking about the locker room, I would imagine also, wouldn't that be good for players like yourself that are trying to rehab, and where you can actually be there in like the summertime with the guys, like if you're like this case rehab and you're not playing, you can actually be there and work out with guys and help the younger guys that are still with the program, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, especially now, I think it's starting to really become a thing where they bring in all of the, you know, the freshman class to do summer school, and there's still a lot of the upperclassmen who aren't going to play summer ball. They kind of hang around, work out for summer school. So, I mean, that's what I'm going to be doing this summer, is going up there, and because I'll be able to start playing catch about the time that starts. So I'll be going up there and kind of working out with those guys a little bit. But, you know, having that professional locker room would really take that experience, I guess, to the next level.
And, Evan, something we addressed earlier to some degree before you joined the show is, you know, with this team, you saw about halfway through the season when we were 14-13 and, you know, going on that 22 out of 25 stretch and winning 20 straight, you really saw a few roles change and guys really start to embrace roles. You saw Ryder Giles go from your everyday shortstop to a PO role, a pitcher only, and eventually even made two or three Friday night starts and did an excellent job of, you know, giving us something on the mound when we were desperate for something in a lot of respects. And then you had Zach Agnos bump over to shortstop, and, you know, just like last season, he really got hot and I think finished the year, what, about 325, 330 with the bat. And he only committed 5 errors between his time at second base and shortstop, which is just unheard of. I think it was somewhere between upwards of 200 chances, right at 300.
Guys, with the time we have left, I know that we had a question earlier, by the way, Bubba, about Ryder Giles. I think one of the things that Ryder is actually a graduate of East Carolina. I think they were asking why he transferred. I think it's a matter of he wanted to play, and I believe Coach most likely talked to him. I don't think the playing time would be there as far as there. He said, why would Ryder Giles leave the program? I'm not trying to stir things 1 year. I don't know. He has one more year of eligibility, Mark, and I think it comes down to – I wanted to pose this to the guys. It comes down to he wants to play shortstop. So he's a great pitcher, but he would only be pitcher only, I'm assuming, again. with Zach Agnos being the shortstop for next year. So he wanted to play, and you guys know how it is. Do you want to play? And as a player, I respect him and appreciate he's got a great family, and I appreciate his time in Greenville. I don't see that as a negative thing in the program. He just wanted to play, and looks like he won't have playing time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, much respect for him for making that decision, and he has every right to do so. You know, he's got 1 year left of his college eligibility. He either wants to finish that year out doing and playing as much as he would like to, or maybe get the potential to be looked at by somebody. And he wants to put that best opportunity in front of himself. And also too, that conversation was probably had between himself and the coaching staff after the year was over with. And for him, he made the decision based off what he thought was best for himself. And I would never knock on a guy for doing that. You know, and it's him looking out. And I wouldn't say it's selfish. He's looking out for himself, yes, but you have to do that, especially in this day and age with the transfer portal and things like that. You'll have a guy and you know, look at NC State. And then all of a sudden you don't when the guy put up record numbers. And but with Ryder's situation, he's doing what's best for him so that he can finish out his career, his collegiate career, on a good note. And I think he made the right decision.
I mean,
absolutely. Go ahead, Evan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just to build on to that, I mean, you're absolutely right. But like I hear just a ton of people, especially now, kind of knocking on him for leaving. And just like I had the pleasure of playing with Ryder for I want to say 2 seasons, and like you're not going to meet a better guy, a better teammate, anybody who cares more about the program while he was there than him. I mean, I think he'll always go down as an ECU legend, in my opinion, just for everything he's done for the program. And if you like want to think about how the season really made the turn this year, I think back to like him going those first 2 starts he made on Friday night. Him going, you know, 7 innings, and I think following it up with like 8 or 9 inning performance. I think that really like kind of kickstarted things and really builded the confidence up with the rest of the pitching staff and the rest of the team, and kind of helped everybody come together. I think him doing that is really what really kickstarted this win streak.
I couldn't agree with Evan more, and Josh O'Neill chimes in, says, I ride with Ryder, a true pirate. No doubt, Josh, and like Evan was saying, I mean, you saw if Ryder Giles was the slightest bit selfish, he wouldn't have taken on the role that he took on. I mean, he did what was best for the team. You heard Coach Godwin say it time and again. So anybody that says that Ryder Giles is selfish doesn't have a clue what they're talking about, and they're just, you know, they're looking at it from an unschooled, you know, kind of a selfish standpoint, but themselves. But Ryder Giles, he was the epitome of what you want from a Pirate player. And no, did he swing the bat as well as he would have liked? No, of course not. But at the same time, he was a tremendous shortstop, one of the better shortstops we've had, and we've had a lot of good ones. And also, Ryder Giles, time and again, led us in sack bunts.
Yeah, and I also want to add a shout-out to his dad, Rick Giles. I know, Bubba, you and your dad are a lot closer to him than I am, but the times I've interacted with him, he's always been a really nice man and very supportive of the program, too. So it's kind of one of those things where I think COVID was a very tricky thing. By the way, I want to mention that, too. Because Ryder would have already been gone. You have the extra year in there, and which that season was very unfair for the guys right after you, Evan. 2020, we were going to have a great season that year, and we didn't, you know, the season that was lost. So there was a lot of tricky things that unfortunately the coaches and players have had to deal with Pete guys have an extra year, which means that takes away from other guys. I mean, it's just a lot of things there. And I know he's going, Bubba, I believe he's going to Appalachian State, right? So Britt Johnson and the guys there at Appalachian State and Boone, he'll have a great year. And he graduated. He had never, we never had any trouble. If you think about it as a program with Ryder, grades wise, character. So for me, he's always a Pirate. I think people are silly and they have no clue. If you've never coached or played baseball or any sport for that matter, you really don't have a voice to talk because you have no idea. You guys, you three guys here on the panel, how many hours that you do a training, school, there's a lot of pressure on that on you guys to perform not only academically in the classroom, but on the field too.
Well, kind of like we talked about earlier, you know, he's a key component of probably what turned the season around. I mean, he's a guy that got put in a situation that the coaches came to him. He stepped up and he helped fill that void. I mean, that right there as a player, but as a character, you can't question that whatsoever. I mean, that's fantastic. And, you know, I would think, you know, his situation is a little bit different as far as like his, you know, being the going through the COVID years, and this is his last year. And you can't beat a guy up for, you know, doing what he's done for the program, but then also, you know, wanting to be able to finish out his last year. I mean, I'm sure there was conversations had. But I think with him, he's the prime example of kind of a kid I look at the whole transfer portal stuff for. There's a lot of stuff that I think is misused in the transfer portal, and guys, you know, move for various reasons or this or that. But I think that with the transfer portal being there, that allows someone like him, you know, to be able to fulfill what he needs to be able to fulfill to move on and fit best for him. So I wish him complete luck and thank him for all that he's done for ECU.
Yeah, you look at with baseball, not like with football and basketball where you have the guy, the kid was at a point guard from Miami basketball. He's not getting paid enough money. So, you know, it's like, you know, it's not like a situation like that, or like I said, where there's trouble with Ryder off the field or anything like that. So I wish him the best, and it'll be interesting to see how he does. I know Bubba loves the guys at Appalachian State with Kermit Smith and obviously good friends with Rick Johnson. So we'll be able to keep up with Ryder and see how he does for the year. As far as next year, guys, I know Bubba wanted to talk about that for 2023, as this is our last extra innings of the year, of the season. So we're looking forward to a new year coming up in 2023. And I know, Bubba, we've got we were talking about early in the show, Evan just joined us a little while ago, but we have a lot coming back next year and a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, certainly. You know, so much coming back. And very quickly before we move on to that, Dave, I just wanted to touch on what you were saying and what Shane was saying as far as the transfer portal, because it is something that's relied on far too heavily. But I do think this is an example of why it is good. And for that matter, I think we have something like 8 or 9 in the portal now. It's quite a few. But, you know, some people see that and just assume it's a bad thing. I think it's a product of us recruiting at such a high level, just like you're seeing in football to some degree now. You had, what, at least like 20 or 25 enter the portal. And, you know, when you're stacking talented recruiting class on top of talented recruiting class, it's inevitable because guys want to play. And it's not necessarily, you know, take my ball and go home or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a mix. You know, I've gotten a little bit of taste of it, you know, some of the side stuff I've been doing with baseball and, you know, peeking into guys' minds about things as far as like going to college and transfer portal stuff. And, you know, I think it allows some kids some more movability because, I mean, they may get to a place and they had some expectations that, you know, they didn't fulfill, or, you know, even a program just in general that they figure out that, hey, it's not the right fit for me. You know, it's time to move on and go somewhere, maybe try something a little different. You know, there's always some misuses of it. I mean, that's the way it's going to be with anything. I mean, there's pros and cons of both of it, the whole point. But I have mixed feelings on it. We don't have enough time on this podcast because I think there's a lot of other things that tie into that and the NIL deals and all that type of stuff. We can talk about it another time. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, guys, players, they got to try to make the best decision for themselves. But I think as a program, we're making the right steps and bringing in good quality guys, and it's just going to continue to breed competition.
Yeah, I mean, like, just to build on to that again, is like, we're getting, you know, one of the top recruiting classes year in and year out, and you're having really talented players come in, having to compete against other really talented players, where they might not get the playing time that they could, you know, go to a different school and start just because of the quality of competition that they have to practice against, practice with every day.
No question. And that's a good point, Evan. With you guys, it's like with the program, the only way we're going to get better is that very thing, is recruits. And so, and then, like I said, the, you know, at the time it looked like a great idea to add. Of course, it worked out for Bryson's favor, guys like that. But at the same time, there, it's really hurt the program as far as, you know, maybe guys that would not be here that are here. So it makes a very awkward situation with fans, not fans, but the coaches and players, where they wouldn't have been here, but they are here, and then they're not going to be able to finish out their career. Just like, I mean, it's been crazy, but I think the good news is we're probably maybe a year away from not having to worry about that again, or I don't know how long. I haven't really looked at it, but just something like that. But with moving on to 2023, it looks like we're going to have the infield is pretty much the same. It looks like, I think we were talking about Lane Hoover would move to, I was talking to Bubba about this off air a couple of days ago, but Hoover would go to center. Then you have Joey Barini in left, and then JJC and right. So you guys are all pitchers. I'm curious, Bubba, do you know, and then Wilcoxon will most likely be behind the plate at catcher, but pitching wise is one thing I was curious about, how, what we'd have coming back, and you guys are all pitchers. So maybe, you know, with the guys coming back, and I haven't looked at that, the amount of years left for those guys.
I'd say a guy that I'm really excited about coming back is Trey Savage. I got to watch him throw a couple of bullpens this past fall, just in person. And dude, he's 91 to 96 in a bullpen with a banger. He's got big league stuff, and I think it started to show towards the end of the season. So I think him being able to build on that this summer and take that into the fall, along with, you know, a strength and conditioning program, I think he's going to have a big year on the mound next year.
Dustin? Yeah, I mean, I you know, I loved his point. I saw the guy pitch in the regionals, the conference tournament, and in the super regionals. He's got electric stuff, and I'm super excited to see him, his development, you know, in the weight room, and, you know, through throwing programs and stuff in the off season that we do at ECU. I'm excited to see him come back. And then you've got some senior leadership that's going to be back, you know, some older guys that are going to get the opportunity to kind of show the younger guys, the recruiting class coming in, how things work. You know, and overall, I thought, you know, it was a pretty young team as far as seniors leaving, not a ton. You know, obviously the offensive production is going to lose some of that, and I'm not at all worried about that, because we have a good core group of guys coming back on the offensive side, and you've got new guys coming in and stepping up every single year. But the pitching, I'm really excited to see some of those older guys come back and step up, but then like Savage and those guys getting the opportunity to grow, because they're going to take this experience this year and how close they got, and that's going to feed them in the off season, or at least it would myself. And I know it will, you know, Coach Godwin and some of those guys that are super competitive, feed them in their training this off season. And they're going to be that much hungrier when it comes to next year. So I'm honestly looking for big things out of those guys next year.
Now, Shane, you obviously spent time out of the bullpen. That was probably what you're most known for, but you also started at times. So just talk about, you know, kind of what Ed's saying as far as a guy like Treya Savage, who's up there, you know, 94 to 96, has nasty breaking stuff, and, you know, maybe needing to develop a solid changeup or some other stuff to go with what he already has. If he's going to move into that starting role and you know, really have the chance to maybe be a weekend guy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of guys out of the pen, you need two plus pitches kind of to be kind of like a main guy out of the pen. You know, you need, whether it's your fastball or, you know, you pitch off, you know, your breaking ball or your changeup or whatnot. But to move to that starter role, I think you need that. You know, you definitely got to have three pitches that you can throw for strikes and be able to locate. And then if you got four, it's even more. It's even fantastic. So, you know, it's just that part of development. You know, I kind of laughed just because my inside of it. But, like, we're down the first base line during the Super Regionals, and we're talking about, you know, Texas guys coming out of the pen. And you know, all those guys can be anywhere from 91 to, like, 96. And guys that we used to play with, they're like, dude, the kid's throwing this hard. Like, I think the radar gun's juice. And I'm like, guys, you have no idea, man, like what these kids are doing now. Like, the training methods that are being put into it, like the amount of money and time and, you know, scientific data that's been put into these kids now to be able to get that much out of them. Like, the radar gun's not lying. And, you know, you see those guys coming out of the pen consistently. But I think – and I'll speak for myself kind of on it. When I was a starter, I relied so much on my defense. You know, and that's one good thing I think that we have coming back is we've got those guys that's got that experience with those key places that, you know, we basically got the infield set and almost the outfield set. So it's one of those things that, like, you've got guys that got experience that have a lot of talent behind you. And as a pitcher, you know, whether you're a young guy just coming in or, you know, guys that are kind of coming up to settle themselves in those roles, you know, you got to rely on the guys behind you. Like, don't be afraid to let some guys hit it and let your defense make plays. So, you know, when you got a good defense behind you, especially as a starter, you know, you can pitch a little bit, you know, a little bit more loosely or pitch a little bit more to contact. So, you know, I think that'll be a thing for these guys kind of transitioning, you know, as far as maybe moving that starter role. But then, you know, young guys coming in that, you know, doesn't have that much experience, it's just, you know, rely on the team.
Yeah, to your point, as far as guys throwing harder across the board, you know, how about Tennessee? You know, even though they didn't make an Omaha, you had a guy like Joyce, that a reliever. I think one game there fairly late in the season, he threw something like 33 pitches, and I believe it was about 25 of them were 103 or harder, and I think three or four that were 105, just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you're seeing that's – I have a word for it, but I don't think it's probably family-friendly on here, but you're seeing a one-of-a-kind kid. Right there is what you're seeing. I mean, to maybe in the future to keep seeing kids like that, maybe, you know, it's possible. But, I mean, that's a one in a not to say lifetime, but that's a kid that you see that's just like, it's spectacular. But, you know, kids are putting more into at an earlier age their training aspects to try to get more out of their body. But I think, you know, the lifting and, you know, in the weight room, but then also like their mobility and everything they're putting into it, they're allowing their bodies to work the right way. And you're starting to see a lot of that come out in college. So, you know, you see your pen guys coming out, and you know, it used to be, you know, if you were 88 to 90, it was like, oh, like that guy throws pretty hard. You see a 92 or 93, you're like, oh, okay. You see a 95, 96, it's like, this dude throws cheese. Like, holy crap. But now, like, you see it all the time. So it's interesting to see what baseball, but no matter how hard you throw, you still got to be able to locate and make pitches. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to make the point of the fielding percentage this year. Bubba helped me out. I believe was it like 986? I mean, it was sick how
Yeah, we were tied for second nationally, 984. So I heard some people, you know, not Pirate fans, but just people nationally. And I was like, what are you folks talking about? And saying, and this team has had its struggles defensively. I was like, anything but. I tied for second nationally in that 984.
Yeah, I was just adding that, Shane, when you were talking about having the guys behind you. I know, Evan, with you being a pitcher too, you play with a lot of great guys behind you. And I can imagine with not only the defense, but with you guys, when you think about Washer with Wash, when you think about Brian Packard, Burles, I mean, there's so many great guys that played on your team that not only were great defensively, but, man, they were really good with the bats.
Yeah, I mean, they were just – I mean, I was fortunate enough to play with a lot of great players. You know, defensively, like, really the only thought process was go throw it in the zone. Hopefully they don't hit it, but if they do, I know there's somebody out there that's going to make the play. And, you know, as far as with the bats, just being able to keep the team within striking distance – when you're on the mound, because you know that, you know, there were almost nine guys in the lineup that could change the game with one swing of the bat with that team.
And guys, we're at an hour, so we wanted to keep respectful of your time. Appreciate it very much. Do you guys have any final thoughts maybe on the season or for next year, things you're looking forward to for Pirate Baseball?
For me, I'm proud of those guys. I mean, given all that they went through early in the year, kind of what the outlook was for them mid-year, for them to absolutely fight back and just basically put out there on the field the exact example of what Pirate Baseball is all about, and to run off 20 like they did is unbelievable. That their season is not a failure to me by any means. It is an absolute success of what they did, and I'm just super excited to see how hungry those guys are to come back next year. So I'm super pumped, and I'm super excited for Cliff to get those guys back out on the field next year.
Yeah, exactly, man. I think, you know, Shane and Dustin could agree, but like watching this team and kind of where they were at the beginning of the year to how they finished, like, just one of those teams that really makes you proud to be a baseball alum, to see everything that they went through and just overcome that. But I think, you know, this season and how it ended is just gonna feed the beast for next year.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, you know, they met adversity at that point, and kind of what I heard from Cliff was it wasn't something that he said. It was the leadership of the guys that had a conversation with themselves, and that's what you got to have. And for them to be able to have that conversation in that locker room and then be able to turn the year around that they did, that's fantastic. I mean, no person, no former player or fan should be disappointed with that, for them to be able to do what they did. It's fantastic. I'm proud of them. And I've always said this, you know, everybody talks about, you know, we're going, when are we going to go? It's not a matter of if, it's going to happen. But what people got to be worried about is when we go, how many times we keep going. Because once that door's knocked down, it's good luck, because we're going to, once we get the taste of that, it's just going to keep happening. So I can't wait for that day, because one of those days I'm going to be right there in Omaha with my boys celebrating, screaming purple and gold.
It's going to be one big party. In fact, I told this on the show, our friend, former basketball player from the late 90s, Othello Meadows, lives out there, a lawyer, and he promised us he's going to have a sports bar where we can broadcast out there, and I want you guys there and a whole bunch of former players. We'll take over that bar, and I'm sure a lot of great Pirate fans. It's going to be fan. That's his hometown, is Omaha. So Othello is going to look out for us. I know he won't let us down. Guys, thank you so much. Thank you for all that you did for the program. Means a lot. Thank you for coming on tonight. And Pirates finish up 46-21 for the 2022 season. But we have a lot to look forward to, and hopefully you won't be a stranger, and we'll have you back on again next year.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Appreciate y'all very much. Have a good night.
You too.
Appreciate them very much for being on tonight, Bubba. And I want to mention our good friends at Next Level Training Center for Trent Britt. In fact, you can simply give them a call, 252-756-NEXT, nextleveltc.com. In fact, Bubba, do you know how my kids wanted to spend a day? I wish I had my, I had thought about it. They wanted their equipment. They wanted to hang out with me at Next Level Training Center today. I didn't even think about it being Father's Day, but thanks to Trent Britt, Gaynell Britt, all the great coaches there. They're a wonderful staff, and they will look out for you. We don't have any sponsors on our show that we don't know, and we can do that. And I want to thank them for the second year in a row for the title sponsorship of the show. Means a lot for sure. Next Level Training Center, they have a great Facebook page, and they do a lot. And Trent, thank you so much. Gaynell, thank you so much for sponsoring the program. I wanted to mention that before we moved on and kind of wrap this thing up.
Yeah, I really appreciate Trent and Gaynell and all the folks at Next Level Training Center and the tremendous job they do. And so, you know, if you have a son or daughter that's not already training at Next Level, definitely, you know, seek some you know, lessons or whatnot from Trent and his excellent staff. But Johnny Robertson, when we were talking about what we have coming back for 2023, as well as the recruiting class and signing class that we have coming in, which is one of the best, maybe the best ever. And that's obviously to be determined. You never know until they get on campus. But very highly talented prospects in this signing class, as always. But you know, Johnny Robertson said, "How about Riley Johnson?" Riley's the guy. He was struggling to start the year, then unfortunately sustained a season-ending injury, and will be coming back from that. But he's a guy that showed some good things a season ago during the 2021 campaign, and I think he hit about 250, but hit 3, maybe 4 home runs, showed some nice power for his size. And he's a guy that has the potential to play center field or one of those outfield positions as well. But hopefully he's coming back well off his season-ending injury.
Good point, Johnny.
And then you also had Josh O'Neill several minutes ago chimed in. He said it would be fun to do a, you know, 70s rewind night, wear some throwback unis. He has a ticket stub from a 1974 game against North Carolina at Harrington Field. He was laughing, and the ticket stated free Pepsi with admission. But and that's something that, believe it or not, you know, even since Clark LeClair has been built back in the Randy Mays years, or even after, you know, some of the season tickets would say, you know, free concession item of your choice, you know, be it popcorn or peanuts or something of that nature. So that's another little perk to buying season tickets and supporting the program in that way. But I would love to see, you know, we'll do some things, you know, like you have the military appreciation hats, if you will, the ones that we ended up wearing probably 10 or 15 times late in the season with the stars and stripes on the Pirates hat. I would love to see us wear the 1961 hat with the interlocking EC, that 1961 NAIA National Championship team wore. I really think that would be an excellent look, and would love to see us do that for a series.
No doubt. I think that was a great point. I mean, you know, when you look at, there's, for example, love the folks in Edenton, the Edenton Steamers, and we'll have to get Tyler Russell, our friend, to come back. He's the general manager of the organization. But they have a thing, Bubba, they're doing on every Tuesday night. They're going to be the Chowan County Cantaloupes, and they're doing that kind of like what minor league baseball is doing. And all the money goes to Boys and Girls Club every Tuesday night. They have a home game. So I would just simply like to say, maybe we could do something and tie it into ALS with Keith LeClair, and maybe we could do some games like with the throwback unis. We could do it for, you know, as a way to raise money for the or even a percentage for ALS.
Yeah, and as far as raising money for the program, when with the, I mean, in addition to buying season tickets and joining the Pirate Club, you know, you also have the EC Letter Winners Club. So remember that, you know, guys that were on the show tonight and anybody else that may be tuned in, and that goes for any sport. It's not just baseball, you know, football, men's basketball, baseball, women's basketball, et cetera. You have the EC Letter Winners Club for all of our athletics letter winners. And as far as the topic of the 2023 season and that roster, taking a look at where some of those guys are playing this summer, you see there you have in the Coastal Plains League, Danny Beal pitching for the – it used to be the Asheboro Copperheads, but now it's the Asheboro Zookeepers. I was actually not aware of that change. You have Joey Barini, who we saw, you know, not a ton of at bats, but when he did get an opportunity, he came up with some really clutch hits and was many times a middle infield replacement, be it at second base or shortstop, when Zach Agnos would come to the mound and Ryder would go to short. You also had Bradley Wilson with the Wilmington Sharks, Justin Wilcoxon with the Asheboro Zookeepers. So I'm definitely going to have to go check the Zookeepers out to see those guys play this summer. In the New England Collegiate Baseball League, you have Josh Groves, A-Mac, and then also Joey Rezek. Joey Rezek actually has since entered the portal, so he will be playing his baseball somewhere else moving forward, and we'll see where that is, and certainly wish Joey nothing but the best. In the Valley League, which is, you know, the Shenandoah Valley, you've had excuse me, guys in the past like Davis Kirkpatrick that went up to the Shenandoah team right there in Harrisonburg or not far from Harrisonburg and do really well. But you have Cam Klotch playing in that league. Also Carter Cunningham, who has since actually entered the portal and will be playing the rest of his college baseball somewhere else. And then you have Wyatt Lunsford-Schinkman, who took on a bigger role late in the season and gave the Pirates some quality innings. He is playing for the Charlottesville Tom Sox. You have in the Appalachian League, JJC with the Burlington Sox Puppets. And then Ryan McChrystal, one of the options at catcher. He is also with the Sox Puppets. In the Cal Ripken League, the one that Burley felt so well in, he fared tremendously well a few seasons ago. He played with the Bethesda Big Train, and the Pirates have four guys with the Bethesda Big Train: Merritt Beaker, Jordan Little, Luke Nowak, and Eric Ritchie. And then you have Jaden Winter for the Crop Dusters, and then you also have C.J. Boyd, who is one of the Pirates who did enter the transfer portal. He is playing with the Alexandria Aces. And then in the Cape Cod League, which is one of the leagues or the league you hear the most about, you have Josh Moreland playing with the Bourne Braves. And then obviously Carson Wisenhunt, who we expect to go very high in the draft. Carson is with the Chatham Anglers.
And I guess is Agnos taking the summer off then?
He is. Zach Agnos, I'm sure we'll be in Greenville working out and, you know, taking the summer off from a baseball standpoint in terms of actually playing games.
All right. So I thought I'd heard him say that, but I wanted to double check with you before. I didn't want to misspeak, but anyway, that's going to be fantastic and a lot of great experience. And by the way, want to mention too, off the top of my head, I don't know the dates, but Cliff Godwin has a great baseball camp, and I know they'll be coming up for this summer for baseball camps. If you're looking for your child, I know they have the CG23 camps, and so make sure you Google that. I wish I had the dates off the top of my head. I mean, I don't know them off the top of my head. I wish I had them with me too, but make sure that you take your son out there and have a good time, and I know they will. There's a half-day camp, or you can do the full-day camp as well.
Yeah. All that information, all you have to do is go to cliffgodwinbaseballcamp.com, and everything you need to know is readily available, self-explanatory. But, you know, if you have questions, you can always, you know, email Coach and obviously Director of Operations, and they'll – answer any questions that you may have concerning the camp.
No doubt. And Bubba, before we go, I just want to thank all our guests, including Scott Rogers, the voice of ECU Pirates baseball. Thank you, Scott. Scooter, appreciate you very much. Coach Gary Overton, Dr. Gary Overton, thank you so much, Coach, for Coach O for coming on. Trent Britt came on. A lot of former players come on, you know, has come on. So we don't have time to name every single one. But thank you for all that have and will for next season. And Bubba, if you don't have anything, I just want to thank, again, Next Level. Thanks to Trent Britt, Gainell Britt, one more time. NextLevelTC.com. You can call them at 252-756-NEXT. They've check out their Facebook page. It's amazing. A facility on Wimbledon Drive. It's off of, if you know where the AMC Theater is in Arlington Boulevard, that end of Arlington, it's not too far away from that on Wimbledon Drive. It's a crazy, awesome facility. When I say crazy, I mean that's good. For us to have that in Greenville, North Carolina is awesome.
Absolutely. And back to Zach Agnos, and like Johnny Gardner chimes in with, and he's talking about the U.S. Collegiate National Team. We've had a few guys on that in recent seasons, Bryant Packard, Jake Agnos, and then also Burley. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that Zach could be a part of that. And, you know, maybe if he's not on the roster, maybe he's an alternate for the U.S. National Team.
And that's awesome. And, yeah, that just speaks volumes again to how great our baseball program is and the respect and the quality of players we get each and every season. All right, Bubba, thank you so much. I want to make sure that to wish you and obviously Matt, everybody, a happy Father's Day, and I hope you've enjoyed it. It's almost over. A couple more hours if you're watching and live. But appreciate Bubba for all that you do for the program, sir. Another great job this season. Well, not only extra innings, but the show is the sports objective as a whole. We got a lot of great summer programming we have coming up. And if you have any great ideas, you can always email us anytime. All right. Thanks, Bubba, so much. We'll see you next time. This has been Extra Innings brought to you by Next Level Training Center. And it's been right here on the sports objective. Good night, everybody. And go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!